Hello, everyone, and welcome to Around the League from UGASports.com, coming to you an hour earlier if you're watching us on YouTube. So we appreciate you doing that. Guys, we've got a really packed slate of SEC football games, making up a bit for a lighter slate last week. As we start every show, we need to update our standings. We do three picks every week. And Brent, you did the thing you shouldn't have done, and it cost you. So you were 1-2, and Coach and I were both 2-1 last week. And it came down to the Auburn game, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You trusted Lane Kiffin. Miss. I'm sorry.
Yep. Yeah, we were fortunate to win, though. I mean, seriously. Hey, we probably should get the half point for that. But
that's not how it works, Coach.
Very much so. Very much so. SEC refs.
Current pick standings, Brent and I are tied in the lead at 10-5. And, Coach, you are 9-4. So here we come, Brent.
Well, maybe if I'm 9-4, I'm probably 9-6, aren't I?
Oh yeah, you're right. 9-6. That's why I went to journalism.
I take 9-4.
9-6. I'm 10-5. Brent's 10-5.
Hey, we're on the honesty program here. You know, I'm not going to be turned into the NCAA for violation there. I told you I've been very poor on my picks. I mean,
you were not poor. Bold prediction last week, though, you did say that freshman quarterbacks would have a day in the SEC, and I'm not so sure if you said TJ Finley by name, but he came in and was lights out for LSU, 7 for 21, 265 yards and 2 touchdowns.
Yeah, I thought Max Johnson would probably be the guy, but TJ looked good. I mean, he's lost some weight and moves around pretty well and really had a good grasp of what he was doing. And I tell you what, they really got after and kept South Carolina off the field, and just outstanding win. And certainly Missouri's win was outstanding over Kentucky too.
Yeah, and my bold prediction was that Kentucky would hold Missouri to less than 20. Well, they held them to 20, but that was about
exactly
as
20.
Much as you can say in terms of Kentucky in that game, which we'll get to that as well. Brent, your bold prediction last week was that Eric Gilbert, you said that he would have more than 100 yards and a touchdown. He only had 2 receptions for 27 yards, so LSU went elsewhere.
They did some things. They did some things differently that, like, we're going to talk about with LSU, that you protect your freshman quarterback in a certain way, and they did that, and we'll talk about that later, I think.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't split him out much. At one time, they shifted him out and threw the slant to him, but they did a good job protecting the quarterback, a lot like Alabama did against us, you know, with the 6 and 5 man protections. But good win for – about the time that Coach knew he's bringing out his new book this week, so he had to get a win.
That's good PR, right? If you're just joining us on YouTube, I'm Dane Young from UGASports.com. That is Jim Donnan, College Football Hall of Famer, former UGA head coach. And that's Brent Rollins from Pro Football Focus and UGASports.com. We welcome your comments, and please do share this with your network of people, because we'd love some sponsorships. And to kind of keep this train rolling, we're going to be talking SEC every Thursday. And this is our 5th or 6th episode. I can't remember. We've done it the whole season. But here we go. Let's jump into this, our marquee game of the week. And, Coach, I want to start with the discussion with you. Arkansas and Texas A&M, if you had told me a month ago that we would be really caring about this game in terms of the SEC standings as a whole, I probably wouldn't have believed you. But Arkansas and Texas A&M, we've got second place in the West up for grabs here. Can Sam Pittman roll in there and stop the SEC darling of Texas A&M right now?
Yeah, I mean, they certainly got a shot at it, a lot better shot than they did preseason. Those kids are believing. They had 2 really good wins, really should have had 1 more. But at the same time, there's a real disparity in the talent level between these 2 teams. Texas A&M's won 9 straight in the series. Several of them been nail biters. A lot of them were actually overtime games. But I think, you know, the reality is A&M probably Jimbo Fisher's probably glad that this team has won those 2 games, because they're not going to sneak up on A&M. I think A&M's got too much firepower for them. They're really getting their running game going. And Brent, even though he's got his Kentucky colors on, has brought out the fact that that Mon needs some help, where he can't have to win the game by himself. And now with this running game, and their defense has just enough pressure on it to get after Franks. It's just going to be a case of for this team to win Arkansas, the other team's got to help them. turnovers, penalties, things like that. I mean, they just don't have enough at this point, but they really are going to jumpstart their program with those two wins, and their recruiting is going to be good. And they're going to change this program around a lot quicker than everybody thought they would.
Brett,
totally didn't get the whole Kentucky reference, the blue shirt reference there. That was bad job by me, but oh well. See, I just picked one out of the closet. But you know what Coach is saying is true. And what's interesting about it is, especially with A&M and Kellen Mond, is the less is more. When you look at Kellen Mond over his four seasons at A&M, he's had over 400 yards of what we call sort of direct called quarterback running plays each of the last two seasons. He has 31 of those right now. So it's not him in the running game. They're using the backs more. They're letting him just be a distributor of the ball, and that's really helping them. But, you know, like Coach said, I think the biggest point you made was that Arkansas winning those games and Arkansas being good helps A&M as much as anything, because now it's not a fall asleep type game for them. They've had off week for 2 weeks. They said, hey, look, you know, this team's on the rise. This team's on the rise. They're coming believing. So those things have really changed, you know, the dynamic of this game. But Arkansas is getting some really good play. And, you know, especially on the offensive side of the ball with Felipe Franks. I know the sort of the data point for this week that I wanted to highlight was one of the things we track at PFF is quarterback throws in rhythm. You know, they take 1, 2, 3, 3-step drop, balls out, 5-step drop, balls out, play action fake, get to the top of the drop, balls out. So in rhythm throws. So obviously Mac Jones is the highest graded quarterback in the conference with a 95 grading on those throws. Guess who's second? That would be Mr. Franks. Yes, Felipe Franks right now, 92.4 grade on in rhythm throws, and they're getting a lot of those for him. He's right now has a passing grade and adjusted completion percentage that is a career high for him. So it's good to see for him, because he'd struggled and been so inconsistent at Florida that he's really sort of flourishing now in the Kendall Briles offense.
Is that just a happy marriage, Coach?
What's that?
Is that just a happy marriage with Franks and Briles? Like,
yeah, how do you see so much improvement? They needed a quarterback that can make some plays with his feet and can add the arm strength. They've just had a rotation of quarterbacks under Morris, you know, the quarterback of the week. It's kind of like Howard Johnson's flavors. You know, they had that, all those different flavors. But I think the main thing with Briles and with the guy at Ole Miss, Lebby, is that the way you pronounce it? The guy that they're so. Both come from, you know, the Briles Baylor type offense, and that's made a big influence in the Western Division right now, a lot more so than what the air raid has done under Coach Leach at, except for the one game at Mississippi State. But I think spreading people out, not only just spreading receivers, but maximum splits. I'm talking about almost out of bounds with the X on the weak side.
Right.
The three guys to the field are really spread. So you've got to defend the whole field horizontally against these teams and vertically. And what you do is you create so many easy run game levels for them because of speed with which they run the plays. They get up there and run fast, and they catch you out of position, and they get a lot of cheap yardage. And you better be ready for it. And I'm sure A&M having these 2 weeks is going to help them get ready for that.
We'd mentioned in the West that this is kind of a second place game in terms of standings. It's also that case in the East with Missouri at Florida. But before we get to that, Brent just texted me and said he's got more A&M points, and I don't want to rob Brent of his great points.
Brent, let's hear it.
Well, so Arkansas right now has the number one coverage grade of all SEC teams, but they're 12th in run defense grade. And you got Isaiah Spiller now. We talked about the running game with A&M. Isaiah Spiller, 4.84 yards after contact per attempt, number one in the league. So, you know, the fact that the running game's there, and when you look at Arkansas's running game, who was their one playmaker coming into the season? We thought, oh, this is good to have, Rakeem Boyd. He has 88 total yards. He's 2.7 yards per attempt right now. So, you know, the running game, can Arkansas finally get some going and maybe keep themselves in the game? I think they actually keep this game closer than sort of the point spread, but I don't know if they win it. So, but yes, next game,
What's the last point spread that you saw for that game, A&M Arkansas?
12.5, maybe. I think I saw something like that.
You know, the thing about Coach Pittman, he's created a monster there now. I mean, now they got to feed it. I mean, everybody expects them to have this big year, and I hope they can, but they've already exceeded the expectations, just winning two conference games. But now they realistically have got a chance to maybe win two or three more, maybe even more than that. But the reality is, for them to win the games that they won, the other team had to give them a lot of help. And that's what happened. Ole Miss turned the ball over, what was it, 6 or 7 times. And you give Arkansas credit. They made them turn it over. That's what you got to do. And then the same thing happened at Mississippi State game, a multitude of turnovers. So if they don't get help, they don't have enough on defense to stop a really good offensive team. And at this point, you couldn't expect them to. I mean, this is the first year in their program.
Yeah, and, you know, one of the things that you had with Arkansas is how do you deal with depth because of a program that's just a roster that's not quite where Sam Pittman needs it to be to compete every week. And that's what I think we're seeing in the game that I was alluding to, Missouri and Florida, is how depth will be tested. A couple notes for you. Florida, in the last month, I guess the month of October, 37 positive COVID tests, and so some of that's still working itself out. Missouri's down to 64 scholarship players, based on just a variety of things between COVID and opt-outs. And we're seeing this across the league a little bit where the rosters are just getting really slim here. So I have no idea what can happen in this game. Missouri is going to have to rally around their first team unit, and a lot of guys are going to be playing a lot of snaps. Coach, Missouri at Florida, what read do you have on that kind of game?
Yeah, I mean, I always want to be a doctor, but I didn't have enough patience. seriously, this game really is hard to pick because you don't know who's going to be playing for Florida. I mean, realistically, or coaching too. I mean, do they have some other coaches that are out beside Coach Mullen who's going to be back in tow? And, you know, it's kind of like a bowl game from a standpoint. They're going to have a lot of time off between the last game and this one. And the continuity they had, the way they were just so fluid throwing the ball and so effective. Now, can you regenerate that in 4 or 5 practices? But I do think the one thing that's going to happen is their defense had enough time to go over because they didn't have to play the LSU game. They didn't have to – everybody start harping on them about what was wrong with them. Instead of that, everybody been talking about the COVID instead of their defense. And they're probably going to do a better job of fitting to the blocks, making tackles, playing in space, all the things that have just looked like a team that's totally up in the air on defense. So I think Florida can match up really well with Missouri stopping the run. And Missouri hasn't shown under Bazelak how they can throw the ball, although he's a pretty good passer. But they really just kept the ball away from Kentucky last week. And like you said, 42 minutes they had it. So I don't think they'll be able to do that against Florida, and I'm sure they're not going to be able to stop Florida's passing game unless Florida just doesn't play with the efficiency that they had before.
Brett?
I think, you know, at least for Missouri's sake, you know, when you talk about Sam Pittman, it's the same sort of thing with Drinkwitz that, hey, we got some momentum. I mean, they've won 2 games since Florida last played. So, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, maybe some positive momentum, some, you know, just confidence as much as anything helps them in this game. And, you know, when you look at this, it's interesting. You talked about the Arkansas A&M being for second in the West. This game in the East is a big deal in terms of if Missouri can keep this rolling. But I like Coach. I don't see that being the case. I think the Florida's offensive talent actually wins out in this game. But a couple of interesting things. Bazelak now has the third highest passing grade in the conference. Behind Mac Jones and behind Miles Brennan from LSU. But another interesting point is you got Florida's highest graded defensive player is someone who's first year playing, and Brenton Cox, former Georgia recruit and player. But he'll be going against Larry Baram, I think is how you say his name, but right tackle who's one of the highest graded tackles in the SEC, highest graded pass in terms of pass blocking. So great little sort of individual matchup if you get a chance to watch this game. But, you know, it's interesting vibe given the fact that it's been so long since you've seen Florida, and that, like, is very much bowl game. That's a great example of way to say it, Coach.
It's a game that Georgia fans need to be watching as well, too, because leading up to Georgia and Florida, what does this Florida team look like? What players do they have available? Because if any kind of spike happens, look at the state of Wisconsin right now. Every week is going to be a little treacherous, I think, from this point, based on what we're seeing. And so people got to do what they're supposed to be doing in a lot of different ways. So we'll just see what happens in that game. Another game that's kind of hard to read, in my opinion. You've got LSU with an offense that's humming, regardless of which quarterback is playing at this point. But then you've got the Auburn Tigers hosting LSU. So this game's going to be on the plains in Auburn. Here's a stat for you, Brent. LSU leads the SEC with 7.5 tackles for loss per game. Also 3.5 sacks per game, also leading the SEC against Auburn's offensive line that's been struggling.
Indeed. And true freshman BJ Ojulari is a big part of that. But, you know, you called it last week and you were actually 100% spot on. If there's a game for your offense to get right, it was playing against Ole Miss. That was Bo Nix's second sort of his – I think he had a 90-point-something grade, high passing grade in that game, or right at upper 80s or right at 90. It was the second highest game of his career in terms of a single-game grade. We had talked about his completion percentage hadn't been over 65%. Well, he was at 77% in that game. You know, so that's a game for them to get right and get some rhythm back for Auburn. But with LSU – and Coach mentioned this earlier in terms of, you know, TJ Finley and his ability as a true freshman to come in. They did some things that you would think you would traditionally do to help your true freshman quarterback starting his first game. His average time to throw, 2.19 seconds. It was the fourth lowest number in the entire FBS last week. So ball's out quick. He was 11 of 11 for 158 yards on throws less than 10 yards. So the ball's out quick. It's thrown short. It's thrown to, you know, playmaking receivers. And also the running game for them. Now, granted, they had a lead. So, you know, they got that lead early. They had some turnovers that helped that as well. But LSU had 54 rushing attempts total for the game. They haven't had that many attempts in a couple of years, let alone, you know, so they've obviously transitioned into more of a passing team. So true freshman quarterback helped him out greatly. I think you're going to see a lot of that again this week. And the key is they have skill on the outside with Marshall, Gilbert, Emery as a running back that's starting to sort of become something of a playmaker for them. So this is I think this is the lowest point spread of the week. I think it's like 3, 2.5, 3. So very much an intriguing game, at least fun game to watch.
Yeah. Here's the thing about a freshman quarterback that you always got to worry about. In my years of coaching them, that it can't come out with that first big game and nobody knows their tendencies. Nobody knows anything about them. They don't have any tape on them and they play at home and they just come out and everything they do is right. And then they go on the road the next week after everybody's on campus, all these national pundits talking to them about how good they are. Now, is he going to be the next quarterback? Is he going to jump in there for Brent? How's it going to be? How's he going to react to that? Is he mature enough to understand that game's over with? Now you got to prove yourself against a defensive coordinator, a veteran coordinator that's going to look at everything you did the week before. And is he's going to really try to mix him up with confusion with all kind of looks that he does? They did that last year against Joe Burrow. They walked into their coverages the whole game, and they waited to the last second to show them, and they did a pretty good job. Although it was in the rain, they did about as good a job of defending against Burrow as anybody.
Coach, watch your mic. I think your hand's over the mic.
Can he react to that? Can TJ do it on the road? And can Nix handle success too? Because, you know, he's been under the gun here for about 3 weeks and he really reacted very favorably. Now, how's he going to do? He's been pretty good over the years. When he's good, he's really good. Bad, he's had some bad outings. So whichever of these quarterbacks takes care of the ball, they're both going to get good running games with those backs, and which one's going to react to everything. So this is a pressure packed game for both coaches, because you lose this one, now you're looking at, you both still got to play Alabama too.
the best thing that's happened to Bo Nix is Tank Bigsby. And despite what I said about LSU's pass rush and their tackles for loss, most of that's been happening on the edges. LSU's not getting much rush from the interior. And in fact, I'd say they're struggling at defensive tackle. And one of their reserves just entered the transfer portal. So he's not in there as well. He's a four-star recruit last year. So what I would tell you is that Auburn's key to victory here, run Tank up the middle. And if you can do it 40 times, do it 40 times, because LSU is going to struggle with that more than they will with some of the stuff on the edges. Don't get too cute with this LSU defense, because they're not that great this year. They've got one great corner, but he's not playing as well as he was last year either.
Another point I would make that I wanted to make and I forgot to is the way you protect your defense is keep them off the field if you're having trouble defensively and play from ahead. And that was kind of like what Brent was talking about, the way they got rid of the ball and all the things they did, good coaching on offense. But also South Carolina moved the ball on them. They just couldn't get the ball. Mm-hmm. So can you get LSU off the field, Auburn? If not, you're not a good come-from-behind team. You've been ahead in most of your games all year and then played down to the wire and either won or lost it in the quarter. So don't get behind against this LSU team, because they'll keep the ball away from you.
We had mentioned team attrition, and I don't know if it's happening more anywhere than Mississippi State with whatever's happening with Mike Leach in that program. Seven players, including Colin Hill, leaving the program within the last 2 weeks. So I wouldn't expect them to be that competitive with Alabama. But Alabama's got a bit of offensive identity defined here, in the sense that I texted this to Brent earlier. 28% of Alabama's receiving yards, 20% of the receptions, and 33% of the receiving touchdowns now out for the season in Jalen Waddle. You just don't replace that kind of production, even at a place like Alabama. Coach, it's probably a good week for Alabama to get an opponent that's struggling, because I think that the offense is really going to have to retool to figure out what to do without Waddle.
Yeah, exactly. You just can't there's no way you can replenish that kind of production, even though you got really good players, because what it does now is it allows you to really focus a little more coverage on Smith and put some extra eyes and ears on him as far as listening to the calls, as far as watching where he is, doing everything predicated around that, and maybe do a little bit better job on the run game now. Because even though these other receivers are going to do a good job, they just don't take your breath away like this guy does every time he touches the ball. And the other thing is about Mississippi State. I got a lot of respect for Coach Leach. I thought it was a good hire. But at the same time, this team's been to bowl game the last 10 years under two different coaches. And they don't – it's not necessarily that they've got – the wrong kind of culture there among those kids. It's just the fact they have to adjust to his style. And so I think he needs to realize a little bit, it might be some of him and not just all those guys too. You know what I mean? Because it's not their fault that the coaches have left, that Mullen took a big job, that Moorhead got fired, but they did win 10 games, 10 bowl. They did play in 10 bowl games and had a team that was ranked as high as number one in the country 1 year under Mullen. So I'd be careful about talking about these kids. That's just my advice right there. I mean, I don't think they got a bunch of turd kids there in their program, excuse the language. I think it's just a case of things aren't working out as good as they thought it would, you know, after that first win. And maybe some of these kids realize that maybe this is not the cup of tea. They weren't recruited by this guy and they're going somewhere else.
Brent, I know you love Mike Leach. It's got to be a little tough to see what's happening so far this season.
Yes, very much so. And Coach hit the nail on the head. It's an adjustment. It's an absolute adjustment for, you know, it's not quite like when Rich Rod went to Michigan and had to completely revamp that system. It's just different. And it's a learning process. And he's kind of a set in his ways cat in terms of how he behaves and how he coaches and how he runs his offense. So it's very interesting to see how it's going down there and the just sort of negativity that's surrounding. With Alabama though, and Waddle, you obviously, there is no other Jalen Waddle. That's we know that. And I think if, you know, where is that going to come up? It's going to come up in the SEC championship game. It's going to come up in the playoffs, things of that, in those situations against the best of competition. I think they're going to be fine for the remainder of their schedule. what are you going to see? You know, with no Waddle, you see more running back targets. Harris, Najee Harris had 7 targets as a receiver this past weekend. He had 7 in the previous 3 games. You know, then you see more of Mechie. He caught 7 of 8 targets. And then also you get to know a guy by the name of Slade Bolden, who is very good name and very much compared to Julian Edelman. He was a high school quarterback, sort of a wildcat type high school quarterback, 5'11", 190 pounds, slot receiver, very similar build. He caught 6 of 7 targets for 93 yards. So it is that next man up mentality, but you're going to see some adjustment from them. But the big key for them with Waddle and missing Waddle for the rest of the season is later in the season, not necessarily, I think, for the remainder of what they're going to do for the regular season.
Yeah, let me ask both of you a question here. Would you have thought that they would have scored that many points against Tennessee without throwing a touchdown pass?
I mean, maybe, kind of. It's Tennessee, and Tennessee's really struggling in a lot of areas. But I understand your point here.
I mean, he's throwing 4 touchdown passes a game, average, leading the nation. And then they one of them went down to the 1, I know. But, you know, you just didn't see once Waddle went out. I mean, hey, that's a good job by Sark. They went to the, you know, like Brent said, control passing game, and they just did a good job with it.
Well, and plus, when you have a guy like Najee Harris, it allows you to transform your offense in a situation like that. And I'll go ahead and allude to my bold prediction for this week, and that's that Najee Harris is going to have career highs in 3 or 4 categories, receiving and passing, because I think he's been going – he was already a focal point of the offense, but I think he's going to be more so now. I think rather than the Smith and Waddle show, this turns into the Smith and Najee show.
The big point is – how much is he going to play? You know, I mean, they got to look at protecting him a little bit too. That Robinson kid looks pretty good, doesn't he? I mean, so that's a good bold prediction, though. I like it.
And they still have Trey Sanders back there as a reserve. That is a guy that very talented at high school, coming off the ACL last year, a guy that Georgia wanted in recruiting. And so I think you'll see Trey Sanders get more carries as well in this middle part of the season. If you go to the cellar dweller game of the SEC this week, it is Lane Kiffin, fresh off a fine from the SEC. Interesting thing to me is that Ole Miss is playing its 6th game this weekend. Vanderbilt, but only playing its 4th. And so these numbers are a bit skewed. But Mississippi's defense, Ole Miss is giving up 45 points per game. Vanderbilt is scoring 9 points per game. What gives, Brent?
I, like you said, with Bo Nix playing Ole Miss's defense, I think it'll be good for Ole Miss's defense to play Vanderbilt's offense. It's just not that good. It is. But I will say this is actually really very much so to me a big game for Lane Kiffin as a coach and as a sort of program leader, program director, just because of you've had these games now where you've been very close and then, you know, lost and or you've turned the ball over a bunch, or like this past week you were complaining about the calls and, you know, possibly rightfully so on one of them. But, you know, a lot of that just sort of negative energy in a way. And now you go play Vanderbilt. Do you sleepwalk through this game and this game's being really, really close and you just got to battle the 4th quarter and win? Or can you, as a program leader, get your team refocused real quick and go and sort of dominate and do what you should, at least from an offensive standpoint, what they should be able to do offensively against Vanderbilt? So I think this is just a more big picture game than anything, even though I think Ole Miss wins in the end.
Yeah, I would point out that exactly. And I'm going to give you a penny for my thoughts here. You catch that one?
Yes, I
did. I got you. You need about 25 minutes.
That's a really good one, Coach. That was actually Lane, how many pennies, Lane, though?
Lane's 1-4, and his big win was over Kentucky. But, you know, he lost to Arkansas, which is – and of course, everybody thought he'd lose to Alabama. But you know, I think he certainly got that program. Everybody's jacked up, but that team has had a lot of good wins over the last couple of years too. It's not like – I think of all the teams that new coaches came in this year, he had the most talent, particularly on offense. Defensively, maybe not. And I read today where Ole Miss is paying not 1, not 2, but 4 defensive coordinators right now. They got the 2 under staff that they're paying – McIntyre from last year and McGriff from the 2 years ago. So they got four defensive coordinators that are paying, and they're not really getting their money's worth as far as what they're getting in results. Nope. But nope. I think Durkin and that other guy will do the job, but they really are limited on defense. But, you know, this is a team that you should get healthy against. Vanderbilt's just woefully undermanned, and their offense just basically doesn't look very good.
I think Vandy's one of those programs that in a normal year you might be talking about coaching changes or program changes, but just the way the finances work, you know, Vandy's just in a tough spot all the way around. Not in a great financial spot athletically, not in a great spot in terms of recruiting. I'm just kind of hoping for the best there. They're by far the worst team in the SEC, and I think, frankly, would struggle against some FCS teams that have their, you know, ducks in a row, so to speak. Final game of the week, and one that you can watch along with Coach Donnan and Roddy Nabolsi and myself. It's a noon kick in Lexington, Georgia at Kentucky. And, Coach, we talked about this, you know, on our Tuesday podcast, but Kentucky only playing 36 offensive plays last week. If they do that, anything like that against Georgia, that game will be over quickly.
Yeah, I think the big key for Kentucky is who's going to quarterback. Is it going to be Gatewood? Is he going to come in there? If it's Wilson, are they going to have a quick trigger on him? But they got to get some results out of the passing game. You're not going to line up and hammer and tong this Georgia team. Got too many good tacklers in space. Got too many guys that could come in fresh. Even though their offensive line, I read on these stats for Pro Football Focus that they're second-rated line in the country. But I think it's going to be a case of you got to generate some offense. And then, you know, defensively, I think Georgia's going to use that same approach that Mizzou did, line up and hammer and tong them, get after them, and use more play action pass and put Bennett on the corner. And this will be a good game for Georgia to reassess what it needs to do. And it's not going to be easy because it's a physical game, but Georgia got too many players for them if they go out and execute.
Brent, Kentucky seems like one of those, you know, I don't want to compare it to their kind of basketball teams, but you see those basketball teams that are trying to win 52-48 and just kind of run out the clock and use every bit of the shot clock.
Mark Fox-esque.
Yeah, yeah. If Mark Fox was coaching football, it might be these Kentucky Wildcats. Do the stats bear that out?
Yeah, and then you look at the last three games, they've only averaged 200 yards total of offense per game. So it's very much a struggle for them offensively right now, and it's just hard. You know, you can do that, like last year you could do that when it was new and fresh and you had such a weapon playing the quarterback position from a running threat in Lynn Bowden, but now it's a little different. You don't have the true weapon that he is in the running game, and you just have to have some success in the passing game. But you know, this game is a just great watch game for me from the sense of it was a perfect time for the bye week for Georgia last week. I think to reset, recalibrate, especially offensively, go work on some of the finer details that they've been missing over the past few weeks. And, you know, what looks different? How do you get your quarterback into a rhythm? Because there's only one game where he's completed more than 65% of his passes in the four. And, you know, when you look at the totality of it, I looked at some of the numbers. When you compare Todd Monken through four games with James Coley from a season ago and then Jim Chaney as a coordinator, in terms of the amount of throwing that they're doing, they're increasing their percentage of pass. They're increasing their percentage of passing on first and second down. They've increased their play action percent. They just haven't gotten the results. They're doing things that from an analytic and how you attack teams now in today's football, you're doing the positive sort of right, heading in the right direction. You just haven't gotten the results. And I think if you can get Stetson into the 65% completion and over and really succeeding from a clean pocket, I think the offense sort of takes a big leap forward over the next few weeks. But how that looks, is it more quick game? Is it more tight end and running back targets? Is it more, you know, finding ways to move Pickens or George Pickens around? That's what I'm looking forward to seeing as much as anything, is what has changed now that they've had those couple weeks to reset and really self-evaluate as much as anything.
It's a really good point, and I think the bottom line, though, is wide receiver play. Are you going to get open? And when you are open, are you going to catch it? there's not been a lot of routine catches for our team this year. You know, a lot of balls that have been dropped, a lot of balls that somebody went the wrong direction or the quarterback threw. There's just not a lot of fluidity. So I agree about the rhythm, but somebody got to step up besides, you know, Pickens and Kyaris Jackson. Burton did okay, but some of these guys got to step up and help them out, tight end wise or back out of the backfield. But you got to get some, you know, a long time ago, a coach told me, you got to throw something good. Even if you're a running team, you've got to throw one play that you got some, that your bread and butter, that you know you can hit 75% of the time. And right now, we don't have a lot of bread and butter in our passing game.
One of the guys that Kirby Smart called out by name, and he doesn't do this a lot, especially really praise or negative. He doesn't just like to call out one individual player, but he did mention Marcus Rosemy Jack Saint. And a piece of that was because of his special teams effort. But I think you're seeing him getting more involved in the passing game as well. So between him and Burton, I think, Coach, at least from my perspective, the receiver room is outproducing the receiver room last year. It may be incremental and it's not where it needs to be as a whole, but the position is improving. And I think that's all you can ask for right now. Let's go ahead and get to our bowl predictions and then we'll make our picks. And then we have to wrap up the show. I mentioned mine earlier. I'm going to say 3 or 4 career highs for Najee Harris, passing run game, however you want to quantify that. Brent, do you have a bowl prediction for me?
I think James Cook is over 100 total yards again this week. I think more and more involvement from him, especially as a receiver, is what we see after that bye week from Georgia.
Coach?
Yeah, I'm just going to look for Texas A&M to really get after LSU. I mean, Arkansas with their running game. I think they're going to really pound Arkansas. You know, not that they're going to win the game overwhelming, but I think they're going to line up and get after them pretty good.
Jimbo would love nothing more. That's one reason that he kind of changed what Texas A&M's offense did. We'll stick with that game for our picks. That's our marquee game of the week. And it sounds like, Coach, you will be taking Texas A&M.
Yeah, I mean, I got friends on both staffs. I actually talked to one of them today from Texas A&M, Daryl Dickey, coordinator, about – he was asking about my wife, how she was doing. He grew up right behind my house there in Chapel Hill. But I'm going for Texas A&M. I'm pulling for both teams, but I think A&M gets this one.
I'm also going to take A&M mainly because they're the home team. But I do think it'll be tight. Sam Pittman teams are playing tough. I just don't see the total depth there. Brent?
Yeah, I agree. This is one of those A&M wins, Arkansas covers type games.
Next up, we have Missouri and Florida. Coach, I'll go to you.
Making me pick first every time here.
Right, Brent, I'll go to you.
Coach, I got you, Coach.
I'm going Gators. I hate to pick them, but I'm going Gators.
I do think Florida's offense will be too much for Missouri, but I also think this is much like the A&M-Arkansas game in that Florida wins, but I think Missouri covers.
I'm also going to go with Florida, mainly because that 64 scholarship players from Missouri, that scares the hell out of me. That's a couple key injuries or weird things away. That just gets tough pretty quickly. Last game to pick. And
they had 64 last week.
They weren't playing Florida last week. and they didn't play.
They're playing a better defense last week than Florida has, I think.
Well, they didn't play Kentucky's offense much last week. I'll put it that way.
Wanted to bust you up a little bit there, Dane.
You're good. I love it. Final game to pick, Auburn Tigers. Look, if we've been losing games, it's because of Auburn or Kentucky, one week or the other. It's those two that are our bugaboos. So I'll start with this one, LSU at Auburn. I just don't see how Auburn's defense, which it is developing slowly, and traditionally I would always pick Auburn at home against LSU when it's close, but LSU's offense is really good. And I'm saying whichever quarterback plays, which it sounds like it'll be Finley because I don't think Brennan's quite healthy yet. And so I think Auburn's going to come after him hard and try to get him out of the pocket and make him uncomfortable. I just don't see the horses on Auburn. So I'm going to take LSU, but I'm gritting my teeth through it because I would never put money on anything like that. Britt?
I don't know. I've been sort of back and forth in terms of how I
want to pick. I don't know
how I want to go with this game. And I'm literally flipping a coin here. And I think I'm going to go LSU as well. And just for the sake of, I think LSU, this is one of those games where I think you're going to get a very attentive and a very engaged Derek Stingley Jr. And Eli Ricks is playing very, very well on the other side of the ball. Had a pick six last week. So, you know, I think those two players are the difference in the game, and LSU just barely wins.
Yeah, I think this is kind of game that can help Stingley from the standpoint he's going to match up with Williams, and that's a real personal challenge for him because he saw what Georgia did against him, and he saw what Ole Miss didn't do against him. And, you know, how are you going to stop Auburn, keep the big throws away? That's what you got to do. South Carolina did it for the most part. So I'm gonna go with LSU too, mainly because it's hard for me to pick – you know, Auburn two straight weeks. I picked them last week, but I'm going with LSU.
That means all of our picks for every single game would be the same because I'm confident yes. We'd all pick Bama and Ole Miss and Georgia to win in those games as well. So
very much
our
so.
Standings will remain the same yet for another week. Hey, Brent, before we get out of here, hey, you want 20 seconds?
Just, let's just add this as a little adjunct here. What about if we pick this Auburn-LSU game? Well, the spread's not enough. It's just 2 points, isn't it? So it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Why don't we, and it started the week.
The LSU, why don't we do the A&M? We're just ad lib here by the OCA. Why don't we do the A&M Arkansas game? Who's going to win with the spread 12? I'm going to take Texas A&M minus 12.
I'll take Arkansas.
I will take Arkansas as well. There's the game that Coach can tie us up in the standings.
All right.
All right, we got that in there. I like that. Brent, I wanted to give you 15, 20 seconds about the North Oconee Titans, if you want to break down what's going on in that world.
We finished our football season. We had a really tough game. We played Prince – so Brock Vandegrift plays at Prince Avenue right down the road. We played their eighth grade team with our sixth and seventh graders. It did not go so well. We were a little physically outmatched. But, hey, we made them work more so than any – team probably that they had played all season. And then we played the Green County there at the end and finished our season on a very, very positive note. So, hey, very just amazed and proud and just lucky that we got 11 games. We played 11 youth football games this season. It was an absolute blast. We have a great group of kids and it was a good season that they were able to have that many around us and many in our area too, just haven't had.
Yeah, well, kudos, if you need advice. Kudos to you and David Pollock and all those guys. Those kids are lucky to have you. I mean, they really getting some good fundamentals. They're learning a lot about football. You know, I'm not a real big guy about letting younger guys play football because they don't know how to protect themselves and all that. But I've watched you guys on tape. You do a great job with them. And I wish more people would study the game. Some of these coaches that are trying to be Duke Rockne, I wish some of them would study the game like you guys do and be better for these young kids growing up.
Thank you.
And
Coach,
if you need an off-season program for your players, Brent, I feel like Coach Donnan could advise you. But from what I know, the best off-season program for football players that age is basketball and then baseball.
Play other sports. Play them all.
Exactly.
Guys, it's always a pleasure. This has been Around the League from UGASports.com, where we talk about SEC every week. We will do it again next week. And for Coach Donnan, Brent Rollins, I'm Dane Young.